solve large, intractable problems.
It's a new venture altogether.
Your brain is a wild horse there.
Because remember, writing is not a team sport.
You are not selling horse carriages when there are cars.
I want to be known only as a trusted advisor.
More like a tourist.
Play to Potential Podcast.
So what we said is that Nykaa is for women who want to look beautiful for themselves and not really to please a man or another woman. So they were not wanting to be beautiful to go into any social circuit or, to attract any man. It was more because they wanted to do it. And I think a lot of our customers are such independent-minded women who today want to live life on their own terms. And also when we chose the name Nykaa, it means that an actress. So we are telling our women to be the primary actress in their life. So their life should be about themselves. And for too long, women have been more support system of the family, and they've compromised their own dreams and ambition for sake of their family. And today time has come for them to be, you know, pursuing their own dreams. And if they dream for themselves, they will get there.
Welcome to the 42nd Conversation and the Play to Potential podcast. I'm Deepak Jayaraman, your host and curator of this podcast series. I'm an executive coach, and I work with leaders and help them play to their unique potential by working with them during periods of high-stakes transition, whether it's organizational or personal. I believe that just like businesses need to be coherent about their answers to where to play and how to win, we all need to be thoughtful about our responses to the two questions, where to go and how to grow. To know more about the leadership and transition advisory work I do, please visit the About section on the playtopotential.com website. In my conversations in this podcast, I explore how some leaders across domains have grappled with the two questions, where to go and how to grow, at various forks in their road that they've walked on. The three topics I'm curious about are leadership, transitions, and careers. In that context, I'm excited to announce my guest for this podcast, Falguni Nair, founder of Nykaa. She's also an alumnus of IIM Ahmedabad. She actually started out in management consulting in Ferguson's for a few years. Then she moved to the banking industry, and she had a successful run in Kotak for about 18 years across three continents. She was a managing director at Kotak Investment Banking in 2012 when she decided to do a control-alt-delete on her career and started Nykaa with a vision of making the best of beauty products easily available across India. Since its launch in 2012, Nykaa has transformed the beauty industry in India with its wide curation and engaging content. The omni-channel retailer continues to build its e-commerce business with over 1,000 brands, 100,000 products, and with a footprint of about 35 stores across 15 cities, housing a range of premium and luxury brands. In our conversation, we speak about Falguni's early years and get to the bottom of some of the choices she made early in her career. Then we talk about her long journey at Kotak and how she grew there as a leader over a stint of over 17 years. We then move on to talking about how she reinvented herself from banking at Kotak to starting up Nykaa, and how she almost ended up starting a business around nursing homes before she started with Nykaa. We also speak about how she's had to adjust her leadership style to this context as she scales up Nykaa. Without further ado, let's get into the conversation with Falguni Nair. Falguni, thanks so much for taking the time to come on the Play to Potential podcast. Excited to be talking to you.
Yeah, it's a pleasure, Deepak. Happy to be here.
Lovely. And one of the things we explore in the podcast is how people get shaped in their early years. We are a function of our context. So going back to your childhood and reflecting maybe on the first 10, 15 years, Falguni, I'd love to get a sense of what are the few formative experiences or events that have shaped you as a person and defined who you are today?
I think, I never thought my childhood was special till more recently. As I think back, I think my childhood was quite special. I think my parents gave me a lot of freedom to pursue a lot of travel and also brought a spirit of adventure in me. And I think there were no cannot-dos in their book. And if I wanted to go trekking, if I wanted to travel alone, if I wanted to go on an exchange program and stay with a family in Kashmir, you know, I mean, all of that was, I was allowed to do that. And I think a lot of that shaped my attitudes. And I think now when I think about it, you know, the whole inquisitiveness to learn more, to travel more, to also to a little bit of a boldness to be able to do it alone. Also a little bit of a spirit of adventure to not fear anything. I think all that has come from my childhood, and I'm extremely I'm extremely thankful to my parents, both mom and dad, to have brought me up like that. Now I do realize it was very unique.
Mm-hmm. And just to get some context, you had siblings. Give us a sense of the nature of the family you grew up in.
Yeah, so we were a family of, a very small family of four, mom, dad, and my brother and me. My brother was a little bit younger than me. And again, you know, another unique thing was that my dad always treated me like an equal. And it was never like, oh, girls don't study so much, or, you know, girls shouldn't get anything in inheritance. I think one of his early be in his bonnet was that everything I have will go equally to my son and my daughter. And I think all those really made me feel like an equal, you know, and really there was nothing holding me back. And I didn't realize at that point, but, you know, I think it was very unique. So today when I think back, I think I probably owe a lot to my dad.
Got it. And just maybe moving forward, you went to IMA, good to be talking to a fellow alumnus. I'm curious about how people think about their first transition after education, right? In a lot of cases, people work and come, but a lot of us came in without prior work experience. You joined Ferguson's and later went to banking, but maybe just to pause at that point in time, having walked the path of banking and having spent some time at Ferguson's, what's your... If you went back in time and spoke to that Falguni who was entering the placement season, what advice would you give her in terms of how to think about the choice?
I think in many ways, Ferguson's to me, I think was a mistake. It was a good place to learn. Consulting is a good place to learn early skills. And also it gives you exposure to a lot of senior, you know, as we call it, the CXOs, because you're dealing with them. And I think those are the two benefits of a consulting organization. And within that, Ferguson's was one of the best. However, very soon in my career, I realized that I wanted to be in finance. I think those days, simplistically, it was because it paid well. So it was like, okay, now I need to move to finance. And I had a choice of being in finance from day one. But at that point, I chose consulting. So I think a few years later, and by then I had kids, so I waited for a couple of years because I told myself that till my children are 3 years old, I won't change my job. I'll try and be in the same organization. So I waited for a bit, and as they became 3 years old, I was itching to move to finance.
Interesting. And also a related question, Falguni, is what is the reflection that people could go through to say, you know, should I go down the consulting path or banking path or something else? You know, if you went back in time at IMA, did you have enough lead indicators to say that you would like a career in finance?
No, when I was very young, you know, when I graduated, I was all of 22. So I don't think I was taking very great decisions, you know. I chose IMA over US MBA, not for very strong reasons, but just, you know, I think I took many decisions just by myself because in our family, I was one of the eldest, you know, in the family, extended family also. So there was no really advice coming from older cousins or anybody. So I used to take pretty suboptimal decisions in my early career. But I think things came easily to me. And even like I told you that when I thought of, I had told myself that after my children are three, I'll switch. And after celebrating their birthday for 3 years old, third birthday, I came back to work. Because, you know, children's birthday are early in the evening. So I came back to work and I was sitting on my desk.
That same day?
The same day.
Wow.
And I was sitting on my desk and I got an incoming call from Kotak saying, you know, we would like you to join us, you know. So I think I didn't even make my CV and the job came along. And by then, Kotak was quite a proven organization. So my other colleagues from IIM were there. So I knew the culture. And I was quite open-minded. They didn't have a specific job role for me. And I was like, yeah, sure, I'll join, you know. I think Uday gave me some choice of 7 jobs. And by the time I joined, I think one of them had cleared up. So I said, But once I make up my mind, that's how I am. I don't really go into nitty-gritty of what exactly I'll be doing. I'm very open, you know, open person. Like, I mean, I'll take open-ended risks.
Got it. And a related question, Falguni, is consulting and also investment banking are reasonably high energy and high octane environments,
yeah.
Where it's that much harder often for women to to sort of flourish and rise to the top. So what's your take on, specifically from a woman's perspective, how have you thought about your career and what has it taken for you to compete on a even keel as you grew?
I think around early 94, when I was doing head of investment banking at Kotak, I was head of mergers and acquisition. And, you know, you'll get an overnight call. There is a merger deal. You need to travel to Chennai or anywhere else in the country. And I had young kids. I used to leave them crying at home and fly off early morning. For those days, somehow they were always very early morning flights. I've taken too many flights at 4:30 a.m., you know. So I think it was really tough. And I used to joke about it that India had a lot of false starts and the market would just be active for about a year or year and a half and then it would collapse. And I said all that collapse of the market gave me time to bring up my kids, you know. So I used to joke about it. But it was really tough when market was at its peak. I remember really tough times when even in the US I was doing sales, which is equal to similar to banking, because if you are doing an IPO, I had to take the Indian clients who were in US to four cities. You know, I used to fly one day to Boston, another day to Washington, D.C., then Florida, then West Coast. Life was really, really tough. I think through my mid-career, I really worked very hard.
And what's been your coping mechanism, if I may? How have you made peace with that, if you went back to that passage of play?
So I think, like you said, high energy. One had a lot of energy between me and my husband. We had a lot of energy to continue to devote time to kids in addition to our work. I don't think we ever use words like, I need my own chill time or I need to chill. I don't think it was always work and kids and kids and work and, you know, somehow juggling to give priority to both these things. And it was like that for the whole family. Fortunately for us, we didn't have other family responsibilities just because of the way our parents were young and they were healthy. So we didn't have any other family responsibilities dragging us. And we had good support system of a little bit of family support and also some support from help that we had at home. And I also drew a lot on friends to help me out sometimes, you know, because like I needed to travel and my kids needed to stay with a friend. I would send them to their house. So I think I drew on whatever help I could get to survive. But I think I never wanted to give up work. I didn't want to work part-time. I don't believe in part-time work. I didn't want to give up work. So except for, I took additional maternity leave. So instead of 3 months, I took 6 months.
This is Ferguson's time.
Yeah, at time of Ferguson's. But except for that, I don't think I took any time off. I just managed through a lot of juggling.
Got it. And maybe specifically zeroing in on maternity transition. Again, I understand that maternity is possibly the point where there's a lot of leakage in the pipeline, the women leadership pipeline. Any specific pieces of advice to women on just how to navigate that passage of play? Because there's a lot of churn, internal churn, external churn that happens.
Yeah.
What's your...
I think a lot of women, you know, try to look at their salary and they try to look at all the expenses that they have to incur to look after their children. And they just feel that, is it worth it? And it's probably not worth it. And I will, you know, I'll just rather stay at home. Because anyway, it's fun being at home with the kids also. So I think they take such calls. But I think one should take the financial equation out of it. And that's what we did as family. And my husband was also extremely supportive on that. We never judged that, did my salary justify all the additional costs that we had to incur in terms of maids or drivers or any kind of, you know, after school facility or support that we needed. So I think we never judged it on that basis. And I think every woman should look at it because I was investing in myself at that point.
So it's not a separate P&L.
It's not a separate P&L. And I was investing in myself at that point because through mid-career, you're investing in yourself. You're really not, at that point, you can't be exploiting all that. You can't be maximizing what you get. You're investing for the future. And if that's the phase, then it may not, the balance sheet may not balance, but it doesn't matter.
That's a great insight. And just coming back to Kotak, you've sort of handled multiple transitions within Kotak. I'm also curious about how people navigate large organizations and manage their career, if you will, within a large organization. So if you really looked at your transitions within Kotak at those inflection points, any wisdom on how people could build a career over the long term while transitioning effectively from role X to role Y to role Z?
Yeah, it's not exactly an answer to what you're saying, but it's a philosophy that will kind of answer in that direction. So I'll share with you.
Sure.
So when I met my husband, he was a lot into Gita. And one of the philosophy of Gita is that karm kar aur phal ki ichha mat rakho. And basically, you pursue what you need to do and do not judge the rewards. And appropriate rewards will, you know, follow at some point. But you don't need to judge yourself through the rewards. So what happens from mid-career and also when you're going through ups and downs of the organizational settling, you know, sometimes, you know, things are not fair to you and your rewards do not reflect the effort you have made. And very often, a lot of people make a mistake of judging themselves by the rewards and their emotions are affected by the rewards. They either feel elated or they feel down. And I think my husband taught me to really dealing the two. And what matters is the effort that we make, because that is what I'm investing for my future. And the ultimate rewards will come. And I think once you can dealing the two, then all the politics in the organization, all the ups and downs and all don't matter. Like, I'm sure I must have faced a lot. I don't even remember them. And I always believed in myself and I just loved my work. And you just keep doing that. And eventually you find that it's worth something.
Got it. And just on that note, is there anything different that one needs to do as a woman to, from a signaling perspective? One is competence, right? How you deliver on the job. The other is often in a large organization, you need to signal performance or behavior. Is there any theme around how women should think about versus men, or do you think it's similar?
No, I think a lot of women feel overwhelmed by more responsibility. The minute they are given additional responsibility, they start thinking, how will it affect their work-life balance? And I think that's not how they should think about it. They should be more open to taking on the work, you know, the responsibilities that they get. Because like I said, it helps you build for your future. And I also felt like when I was moving to London, I think Uday offered me to head our London office. And I was like, but I've never done that. And then I said, okay, I took a step back and I told myself, and after I met him, I went home and then I said to myself, but if he's ready to take a bet on me, why not? And I took it on. And I think I was overwhelmed at that point because I was taking 4-year-old children into a new country and new environment. And I think I was quite tense. I think I remember once I started crying and everybody was wondering, why am I crying? And it was only because I just was hoping that I'm able to look after my children in such a, you know, new place and a new environment. So I felt that I was overwhelmed, but I didn't allow that to affect my work. And I continued with the responsibility I got. So I think women have to signal that they're ready to do what it takes, whether it is travel. When I was younger, I never worried about travel to remote places. I never felt that I should not travel. I remember I used to go away on a very long trip, and once my dad called my boss to say, now she's been out for so many days, you know. And that's when I realized that I used to really not worry about all those things. But I think you have to commit to the job.
This is your host, Deepak Jayaraman. It's interesting to hear Falguni speak about her hesitation to take on a bigger job when she went to London, especially since she also had a young family at that point in time. Something very similar came up in my conversation with another IMA alumnus, Rupa Kudwa, currently the head at Omidyar Network in India. I asked her about the key points of leakage in terms of women rising to the top. And she said that while there's enough people speaking about the number of women opting out of the workforce around maternity, there is much less commentary around women having a barrier in their heads when it comes to women taking the leap when a big leadership opportunity presents itself.
The second barrier that women hit is later on, when they are in the upper end of middle management or in senior management. But when it comes to them taking the top jobs, I feel that there it's a mental barrier of self-belief that I can and I should ask for the top jobs and I can do it. I think women hold back. They hold back in asking for a seat at the table. And I think that is where other women leaders can play a very big role. My own thinking on this has evolved in the last 15 years. If you had asked me this 15 years ago, I would have said it's all about merit. And, you know, if you do good work, you will be recognized. Women don't need special treatment, is the argument that I would have made. Today, I believe that the second barrier that I talked about is a very big barrier. And therefore, it is actually almost incumbent on other women leaders to reach out and talk about this issue and help other women to cross this barrier.
I guess it is critical for organizations to provide that support structure or that scaffolding for women to support each other as you rise to the top. If you're enjoying the podcast, please take a moment and rate and review on iTunes or Google Podcast Player, Spotify, or any other platform that you use to listen to this content. It will help others discover this. Do also share with others that could benefit from this content. Now, let's get back to the conversation with Falguni Nair.
Moving forward in your journey, Falguni, after 19 years at Kotak, you decided to set out as an entrepreneur. I think at that stage, Flipkart wasn't even funded at that time, I understand. Before we talk about why Nykaa, I would love to understand how you took stock of life and choices at that point in time. You know, what were the options or choices in front of you as you saw it? And just how did you think about success at that point in time?
So I think throughout what I call as my career at Kotak, and I kept growing in the organization and the kids kept growing. And in 2008, my children went to college. I have twins, so they both went together. And a lot of people call it emptiness syndrome. So I got into activity, higher level of activity by building a holiday home in Alibag. But that project finished soon, within a year. And then I was like, okay, now what more do I do? And I also had seen in my career at Kotak a lot of entrepreneurs up close. And I'd seen their passion to build their business. And I had seen how investors never believed in them. But also through the years, I'd seen that how they persevered to build their businesses, including in some cases, they build beautiful brands. And I think I was itching to do that journey. I wanted to be an entrepreneur and I wanted to experience entrepreneurship. And I wanted to believe in something and create it, whether the world believed or no. I also felt to succeed in a business, you need to be spotting the trend early and getting in early so that you get advantage of time, so that you can build something unique before many people jump in. So with all those beliefs, I was itching to start something. And as I looked around what I wanted to do, I was quite convinced that being a multi-brand retailer for beauty was a good thing to do. I was also aware about power of search. I also was aware about Amazon and internet being strong, e-commerce being strong. So I wanted to build in India an e-commerce platform that will retail beauty. And that in 2000 and around 2011, when I was thinking about it, was not such a good idea. Like I said, all the way till end of 2013 or 12, I think Flipkart was not even funded. So when I started the business, they were just total naysayers. You know, no one believed in e-commerce, no one believed in beauty. And everyone's like, what are you doing? You know,
they thought what else? Maybe stick with that phase for maybe a minute or two more. What else did you consider? What was the runner-up on that list of ideas you were trying to pursue?
Yeah, so there were more. There were 2-3 other ideas. They're quite interesting. So one idea was to basically professionalize nursing homes and kind of brand them. So create a management company and a branding company that improves the quality of nursing home in India and brands them and you know, does all the central sourcing, central training, better quality staff, better sourcing, better hygiene levels and branding, and Antico revenue cut at the top to make the business viable. And I really believe that that business would be very big, because I saw there were so many nursing homes that existed. So it was a ready market, and I was going to improve a ready market. So it made a lot of sense to do that business. But I was a little bit afraid of the, you know, I was afraid that what will be my personal, you know, disappointment and commitment if some nursing home doesn't perform to the standard that I expect, and if there is a mishap. And I didn't want that on myself. So I just thought that that's not what I want to do. I kind of got a little bit scared of trying to go into that business, though I believed in it more. Another business I had in mind was more like, I think, second home rentals, because I realized that a lot of people have second homes and they are not being used. So it was a little bit like Airbnb, but not really the primary homes, but, you know, secondary homes people would rent for a weekly rentals. And I thought that business would work, but because I believe that that business would definitely work in Europe. But I felt that in India, with our weather conditions and limitations of, you know, domestic travel because of the weather conditions, I felt that it's not such a good business. So I rejected it, so to speak. And the third was beauty. And in beauty, I was inspired by Sephora. I'd seen Sephora in the US, and I would buy more beauty in Sephora than in other retailers like CVS. So I felt a Sephora-like format, which is multi-brand retail, gives advice from a customer perspective, is a good way to go rather than push, push, push from a brand perspective. And I just jumped in. When I think about it, I was a bit scared. I knew that if I was performing a ballet, it was not New York. But I said, God, please let it be at least Bombay and not Timbuktu. So because the beauty industry was so small in India at that point, and I knew I needed to grow it, I just wished that consumer would respond and consume beauty. A lot of people used to say Indian women don't consume beauty. And beauty is very big business in Japan, in South Korea, in US. So I said, okay, if it's, you know, if I'm performing a ballet, okay, maybe it's not those markets, but let it be at least Bombay.
Understood. And just from a life stage perspective, given the average age of the average entrepreneur, clearly you took that call at a very different stage. And after having spent a lot of time on the advisory side, so how did you wrestle with that? Was that a consideration in the sense, is it right for me at this stage of life?
No. I wanted to do it before I turned 50, because I felt that once I turned 50, I won't have the motivation to do it. I thought, I mean, those days also retirement age was 58 or sometimes stretched to mid-60s. So I felt I had a solid 12 years or so to commit to my new work. So I wanted to do it then. I personally, being a mother of two kids, I never felt I was ready before that. I felt I had too much on my plate with my job and my kids to want to do entrepreneurship, because I knew that entrepreneurship will make me commit and work hard like never before. And that is absolutely true. I've worked very, very hard ever since I became an entrepreneur, because to see the business to the finishing line needs a lot of time commitment, a lot of hard work, and yeah, a lot of effort.
This is your host Deepak Jayaraman here again. I find it fascinating to see how Falguni has reinvented herself to start Nykaa after her run at Kotak. While most of the entrepreneurs we see today are around 20-25 years of age, incubating business as soon as they graduate from undergrad, she seems to have done this after about 25 odd years post-graduating from B-School. Quite incredible when you think about it. When I look at a lot of the people around me who've had a fantastic run for about 15-20 years, they often make a lot of money, often enough to take care of the rest of their lives. Then they start wondering what next, and I find they're often rudderless. I tell them that while there is a wealth manager who takes care of your money, the real question at this stage often is, when you made all the money, what do you do with your time? No easy answers here, but it's a problem that you need to solve with as much attention and thoughtfulness as you did when you were getting your first job. With money in the bank, I often find that people get lazy in solving this, as the stakes are not as high. The one piece I find interesting is that while people get all kinds of advice to manage the money, they often don't do as much in terms of seeking advice for the transition on how to manage their time and how they could reinvent themselves. While leaders often invest in a strategy consultant to get advice on the where to play for their company, they often don't take professional help to address the where to go, which is the parallel to that question in the context of the leader's personal journey. The one book that I found thought-provoking in this context was Half Time by Bob Buford. He talks about how we could move from success to significance around this phase of our lives. If you're at this phase, you might also find my podcast conversation with Stu Friedman of Wharton relevant. He talks about how we need to think about four domains of life: self, work, home, and community, and speaks about how we should try and find a life that's in harmony with what matters to us across these four dimensions. And sometimes when you hit a financial milestone, the weightage you attach to different segments changes significantly, and you might want to think about how you align your choices with what matters to you across these four domains. Now, let's get back to the conversation with Falguni.
And reflecting on your ride till date, Falguni, you've spoken to entrepreneurs at PVR Cinemas, UTV during your banking days. Just in terms of what you thought about entrepreneurship from the advisory side and what you've been through, what are some of the big differences that you feel you've underappreciated as an advisor?
No, I don't think I underappreciated anything. I think I was totally ready for the ride. So for me, I discovered some additional beautiful things through the journey. So my daughter shared with me a poem called Ithaca, which says that, Ithaca is a journey and it's not the destination. And enjoy the journey and enjoy every moment of the journey. Treat it as you're gathering new experiences and don't let the fears come to your heart or to your mind. And, just enjoy the journey, and that's the way to do it. So I have enjoyed Nykaa journey like that. I have no fears. I have a lot of optimism. I'm enjoying every moment of it. And as a student of management, which all of us are, I personally felt that this business has allowed me to really blossom and flourish. Because in my earlier jobs, maybe I had some skills, like maybe good sales skill, good finance skills, good, maybe legal skills, but still it was very narrow. And at Nykaa, it has got extended to, a lot of what I call as operations management skill, marketing skills, branding skills. So every aspect of management, management is what I've learned at Nykaa. So there were certain historical strengths and there are new areas that I had to learn. So I was not good at technology. I had to embrace technology. Today, I swear by technology. I think the power of technology is so immense. And I learned and experienced it at Nykaa. And I'm so glad and happy that I could experience it, because today I'm such a believer in technology. And similarly, even marketing, brand building has been so much fun. And I kind of dabble into every aspect of the business,
sure.
Whether it is ops, whether it is marketing, whether it is finance, whether it is technology, whether it's legal and compliance. When you're an entrepreneur, you'll never let an agreement go. You will read every line. So I think it's a very different way of doing business.
And from a leadership and mindset perspective, if we really reflect on your journey at Kotak and now at Nykaa, one is sort of a B2B finance context to a B2C consumer context. And second is also your established firm, established brand, to setting up the brand, building up a platform. Talk to us a little bit about, from your personal journey perspective, how have you had to shift your mindset and your leadership style across these two different contexts? What have been the big shifts that you've had to make?
I think in my early days of Nykaa, I knew that I wanted to build a brand, and I wanted to build a brand that consumers trust, and I also wanted to build a brand that has virality, excitement and virality, so that people are talking about it and people are embracing it, and the effort needed to get those new customers it doesn't feel like huge effort to get go ahead. So, it's kind of a smooth ride rather than, push to move ahead. So to my surprise, what I found was that simple things that we did helped us establish as a trusted brand within a short period of 2 to 3 years. Nykaa was such a young brand, and still people started saying, you know, I trust Nykaa, and you know, I don't expect Nykaa to do this, you know, sometimes. So I think all that came from very simple principles, which are almost like the value system that you have in life, is that we never would say something and do something else. So if we said that it's up to 30% off, then the whole conversation in the company would be, so what percentage of SKUs are at least set 30% off? Mm-hmm. If it's not 30 to 40% of SKUs at 30% off, we can't say up to 30% off. So we won't say that up to 30% off and then have only 10% of SKUs at 30% off. So everything we said and believed in, everything we said, we truly, we truly did. You know, so I think walk the talk, so to speak, you know, and I think all that and a genuine concern for customers and genuine concern to do right for the customers. I used to say small things like, I'd rather sell the right color of the lipstick at full price than sell the wrong color at a discount, because then the consumer happiness won't be there. So looking after consumer satisfaction, caring for their experience, I think all that we put center stage. And also in this business, we believe that we needed to educate the customer. So instead of being not caring about that, we really worked on educating the customer. And I think all that made us earn a status as a trusted brand so quickly that it was like a big discovery for me that, oh, now Nykaa is truly being trusted. And I think that's a big asset that we have today. And along with that, we also got a lot of virality through doing fun things. And we appeal to the millennials. Millennials, if they like something, they embrace it and they really share it. So we are just amazed at how much of sharing that goes on anything that we have. If we have a good video, it's being shared a lot. If we have a good contest, it's being shared a lot. If we have a good message, it's being shared a lot. If we have a new product, it's being shared a lot. So I think we became a brand that has a lot of virality, and that was also a lot of fun.
And what drives, I mean, this is sort of, I guess, a question that a lot of people ask, what drives virality? Because there's a school of thought which says that this is something that's beyond your realm of control. Some things just go viral, some things don't. What's your take on driving virality? What have you observed?
Yeah, so early days I used to apply myself a lot that how can one get virality? And I was told that you have to aim for virality and it may or may not come. So yes, you have to nudge for virality a bit. So maybe if you're doing a post, you need to say, you know, share it if you like it, you know, those kind
nudge.
Of things. So I think a little bit nudge is needed, but also it needs to be authenticity, because nobody wants to share something which is not authentic. And it also has to be along the value system of not just your value system, but the value system of your consumer. Because if it is not as per the value system of your consumer, then again, it won't be shared. So we understood our customer value system very early on, and we defined it like that, and the consumers who believed in it became our backers, they were early adapters. So what we said is that Nykaa is for women who want to look beautiful for themselves and not really to please a man or another woman. So they were not wanting to be beautiful to go into any social circuit or to attract any man. It was more because they wanted to do it. And I think a lot of our customers are such independent-minded women who today want to live life on their own terms. And also when we chose the name Nykaa, it means that an actress. So we are telling our women to be the primary actress in their life. So their life should be about themselves. And for too long, women have been more support system of the family, and they've compromised their own dreams and ambition for sake of their family. And today, time has come for them to be, you know, pursuing their own dreams. And if they dream for themselves, they will get there. So I think to give themselves permission to dream for themselves is also a big empowerment. And I think we, our message to women was what they really related to.
Got it.
And since we had similar value system, they were very comfortable pursuing and sharing what Nykaa was offering with their friends.
In terms of pie chart of your time, if we took a screenshot now and let's say did a screenshot maybe 3 or 4 years back, let's say startup and scale up, if I may pick two different points in time, talk to us a little bit about how that pie chart has shifted, what has changed, what has stayed the same, just in terms of where you devote your time and attention.
So I think in the early stage, I was involved a lot with the website, the UI UX of the website, learning what the consumer was about, being in the front line to help win the brands and commercial discussion about the brands. Now at this scale, Nykaa, like you said, it's quite a proven business model. So I don't need to worry about that so much. So I have to worry about new things. One is my organization ready for the scale that I need to achieve? So I have to worry about new things. That is my organization ready for the scale that I need to achieve? And believe in that scale, you know, instead of constantly doubting. Because if I doubt it, then we'll never be ready for it. So in e-commerce, where we are growing at 100% year on year, to believe in that growth, to be ready for the growth, to be able to plan for the scale, and then to monitor execution of quality execution, where the customer experience is not dipping and the customer experience continues to be maintained or improved. And then understanding what really consumer wants from you, how do they see you, what do they want from you, and bringing about logical extensions of business, keeping that in mind. I think those are the things I spend time on. And then as you scale and get, as you get your next 25 million customers, you know, you have to understand that how are they different from your first 25 million customers, and how do you reach them cost effectively, and what are those new marketing tools that will work, and what will those consumers choose in terms of what they'd like to buy, and do you have that? Because assortment is very big for success of an e-commerce company. So, you know, assortment, marketing, right marketing strategy, and then the whole, you know, support system that supports the organization is all that I need to focus on.
Got it. And just moving on to this transition from startup to scale up. And if I look at the mortality rate in the entrepreneurial ecosystem, a lot of that mortality, my understanding, is around this phase where organizations start up well, there's a good idea, but at some stage they lose steam for one reason or the other. So from your journey, for startups to transition effectively from phase one to phase two to scale up, what are the key shifts from a leadership perspective that people should make, as you've observed?
See, again, I come back to the philosophy of Gita, where I feel that you are only a medium, in the sense that, like, we call it haste. So basically, Nykaa's success is predetermined by, you know, by supreme force or something, unknown forces. And that has made a lot of, like, we made a lot of decisions which were the right decisions. And a lot of our success came easily to us. We chose to be inventory-led in a market full of people who are doing marketplace business. We chose to put a lot of content on the website when the traditional philosophy was to not have too much distraction on the website. Like, it was like, let there be a quick completion of transaction. And we thought that doesn't work. We should allow customer to learn on the website. And maybe they'll buy, not this time, next time, or fifth time, or sixth time. We were patient. So we did a lot of things that we did. On hindsight, it looks like we did right. I think we just went by our simple understanding of the business, that what it entails, like beauty can only be sold through education. So we took some simple principles like that in beauty, where there's expiry date. If you try to do marketplace business, a lot of vendors who have got stuck with old products will try to sell old products. So I think being inventory led was important. So we went by first principle, and we built our business based on first principle. And we've never regretted it. And we've come out looking very different. We never watched competition and built our business. We always looked at consumers, their needs, and built our business to serve those needs. And when I think about it, that's the only way to do it. And I feel that sometimes, you know, like, even competition, like early days, everybody used to ask the question that, how are you Amazon proofing your business? So, I mean, you know, Amazon crawls a website, looks at your prices, matches it, or goes below that. We decided to ignore it. And we realized that they stopped discounting in our category because they knew that Nykaa won't discount it. So what's the point, you know? So I think we really built our business in a very different way, you know? Like, we built it based on what made sense.
Hmm.
And I think some of this is, it's just like, you know, it's destined to happen and it happens. And I think the kind of scale that we've got, which is like, you know, I think there were no retail format that did numbers like this. So Nykaa became the largest online beauty retailer, then the largest beauty retailer. And all that, along with the kind of quality of brands that came and listed on our platform, everything is very unique. And I think when I meet a lot of our international brand partners, I mean, they also have not seen a model like this elsewhere. The amount we are able to influence the customer, the amount we are engaging the customer is all very unique. So I think it's just, of course, the power of technology, the internet, the e-commerce, all that is there. But there's a lot of the soft factors that went into our success. And I think some of it just came to us more by looking at the basics of the business.
Got it. Falguni, coming back to how you make decisions, how you make choices, I'm also curious about how entrepreneurs manage the key stakeholders, one of them being investors, especially when you're, let's say, decision-making philosophy and the duration for which you're solving is different from the investors. How did that play out in your case, or how does that play out, and how has that influenced the way you make choices?
I've been very fortunate to have a set of investors who totally back what Nykaa is doing, and we are really fortunate in that. But I can understand very often how investors have a shorter-term mindset linked to their fund life, sometimes 5 years, sometimes 7 years. And very often the companies need to be built for longer time frame.
Yeah.
One thing I do is that I speak as it is. I don't give different projections to investors. I think our projections to investors become our business plan. I do not say different things to investors. They always ask me that, are you open to selling the business? And I always say that every business should be built for the long term, and a business should have a life of its own and should assume that it'll run forever. And it's usually such a business that gets good valuation at exit also, because it's a valuable business. So I always said what I believed in. I did not try to give answers that would please them. We never built for top line revenue or valuation. We always built for long term sustainable business. And we used to tell the investors, our focus was always that, yes, I mean, we were different from traditional business, where in e-commerce world and technology world, you have to invest ahead of the time. So if you look at traditional businesses, they would only invest the surpluses being generated by the business. I mean, they would raise money for building a plant, but in e-commerce, there's no plant and machinery. So we have to spend ahead and then later scale the business. So yes, we did invest ahead, but our desire was to be a long-term sustainable business. And I think we would always tell investors that. So whichever investors believed in our philosophies came on with us, and the ones who didn't believe don't have to be with
us.
So
you solve it by picking the investors who are aligned with what you're building.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
This is your host Deepak Jayaraman here. I'm reminded of a podcast conversation I had with Nanda Nilekani a few months back. We spoke about how he's reinvented himself several times over, from building out Infosys, becoming the chairman of Infosys, to the UID project, to his stint in politics, coming back to Infosys, and so on. One of the questions I asked him was how people should think about selecting co-founders. And this is what he said.
The choice of co-founders is one of the seminal choices of any startup for multiple reasons. First is that you must share common vision. You must share a common value system. You must share a common desire to postpone your gratification for another day. Because building companies, especially building companies to last, is not a sprint, it's a marathon.
Right.
So if your partners are short-term oriented, your partners want quick rewards, if your partners have ethical issues, it doesn't work.
The time frames need to...
Yeah, everybody should say, okay, we're willing to defer rewards for a decade. Now that's a big ask.
If you want to listen to this particular segment, you could go to Nugget 11.03 by Nanda Nilekani. Coming back to what Falguni says, if one needs to build a long-term sustainable business, It is critical to ensure that when you pick your partners, whether they're co-founders or investors, they are aligned on the time horizon over which you're building the business, and you're not just making these critical decisions based on surface level metrics. Now, let's get back to the conversation with Falguni.
And coming to scale, Falguni, you spoke about, I understand the run rate is around 1,500 crore per annum, and most of the competitors in this space max out around 100 or 200, from what I understand. So as an industry leader, how do you set benchmarks for yourself? And how do you set a vision when you're sort of ahead of the pack by such a multiple?
Like I said, we are always inspired and motivated by our consumers and what their needs are, rather than looking at competition. So we will never look at, like when we introduced our nail colors, the Indian market for nail colors was almost non-existent because it's a difficult product to make. And I used to go to a parlor at the Oberoi, and the nail color tray there in a parlor like Oberoi won't be full. So we saw a gap in the market and we brought nail colors, and they were a huge success. So we are always addressing a consumer need, which very often is unmet. But we don't say to ourselves that, oh, this must not be a big market. Consumers are not buying it. We believe that consumers need it. And if the right product comes at the right price, they'll embrace it. Even recently, we've launched a whole bath and body range. And bath and body is not a big category in India, especially at a premium price points. But we don't fear that. We actually make those bets. And we always have discovered that that's the right thing to do. Even we're not so competition obsessed. Even when we launch our nail colors were better quality. And because of that, in terms of pricing, they were almost 25-30% more than the benchmark brand prices. And we did not worry about it. And we launched it with confidence and they flew off the shelf. So I find that we have always done what is right for the consumer. And that's been our guiding philosophy. And even today, all our growth is being driven by the consumer needs rather than what others are doing, or because someone's faltering, we should jump in, or because someone's, done something well, we should stay away. It's totally, I study a lot what our consumer wants and likes, and we always cater to what our consumers want.
Just moving to the leadership at Nykaa, I understand your children are in the business. As you build out the organization and bring in high quality professionals, how have you thought and how do you continue to think about riding this balance of getting your children involved at the same time, ensuring that that doesn't come in the way of you attracting top-notch talent into the company?
So Nykaa has a very young team of management professionals. There are about 10, 12 of them. They're all below age of 35, very few exceptions who are on the higher age side. I think the way I look at my children, that they are part of the same team of 10, 12 senior people who are working with me. And each of them is growing their area of business. And we feel that such big businesses of scale growing so rapidly are more teamwork. And it's like playing an orchestra, which I always say that it's a well-coordinated dance. It's an orchestra where we need to play as one team and all of us have a part to play. And that's how we all look at it, rather than, the traditional hierarchical thing where, there are fiefdoms. And I don't think we build our organization for that. The new age organizations are built very flat, with each one knowing their responsibility and driving it, but a lot of interdependency, because we will never allow, say now we have a fashion business and a beauty business, but we will not allow fashion to have its own marketing, have its own technology, have its own operations. We'll try to keep finance, tech, marketing, HR, most of those support functions as one common. So customer service, operations, you name it, marketing, all those central functions will be common across the two businesses, and brand relationships and, the category responsibilities will be different. So we are building a very interconnected businesses, and my children are also part of that team, large team of people who are running with the business. Of course, they'll have a longer term stake in the business.
Sure.
And that may allow them, you know, longer term commitment from them.
Sure.
Which may happen even with some of the other professionals.
Sure. But I was just curious from a behavioral perspective, if there was anything that you do consciously to ensure it's sort of a level playing field, if you will.
Yeah, most people in Nykaa will tell you that it's a level playing field. I don't play favorites at all. However, in fact, I have to be cautious about some other things because children are always with me even over the weekend. As their boss, I have to make sure that I don't
overwork them
on the weekend and ask difficult questions on a... I used to earlier do that and I realized that's a mistake. To tell them on a Saturday morning or a Sunday morning saying, oh, that store is not looking good is really a disaster because... the whole weekend they'll be worrying about it. So I think I have to be very careful that I don't bring work home.
Right.
It happens eventually, but try to consciously not do that.
Lovely. Just wrapping up, Falguni, this podcast is titled Play to Potential, which is about people picking the canvas where they're likely to flourish in a thoughtful way and having picked the canvas, playing the best game that they can. So given your journey and your reflections, in summary, what's your advice to people for them to play to their potential?
I think, it depends on individual likes and dislikes. I always wanted to build a brand. I always wanted to be in a consumer business because I felt that a consumer business can scale beyond an individual potential compared to being an advisor or a doctor who also add a lot of value, but they add value on a personal basis. So they, it's the same thing in terms of scale versus a lot of individual attention and adding value by saving someone's life or really being very meaningful contributor to someone's success. So I think it depends on what you want and what you like. So my advice is always to understand that what is it that really interests you, and your area of interest has to be you have to be interested in it for a long period of time because you build on something over a period of 8-10 years. Nothing happens in a jiffy. So I personally feel that to choose something that you love and then continue to build on it, and that's the best way to play to your potential.
Lovely. Thank you so much for your time, Falguni. Pleasure talking to you.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure too, and really nice meeting you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. I hope you found the conversation purposeful. If there's one thing that strikes me in this journey, it is that Falguni has embarked on this path of building Nykaa after becoming an empty nester. In a world where we have awards for entrepreneurs for 40 under 40, 30 under 30, and maybe very soon we'll see 20 under 20, it's really inspiring to see an individual so excited about building a business at this phase of life. If we think of a long life as a 50-over cricket innings, turning 40 or 50 is like getting to the 20th over or the 25th over mark in the innings. Even if you've had a blazing start, it's critical for you to consolidate and make the full innings count. And Falguni sets a great example for people to make the second half of the innings count as we go about our journeys. If you find the podcast purposeful, I would really appreciate if you could share it with somebody who would find it of value, or rate and review on the platform where you access it. It's available on Apple, Google, Spotify, Savan, and most of the common podcast apps. Over the last couple of years at the podcast, I've had the opportunity to speak to several women leaders across disciplines. This includes business leaders like Vinita Bali, Meher Padamji, Zia Modi, Rupa Kudwa, Vedika Bhandarkar and Anu Madgaonkar, social impact leaders like Neera Nandi, artists like Bombay Jayashree, sportswomen like Deepa Malik, and so on. You can either listen to the full conversations with these leaders or specific nuggets that pique your curiosity. If you go to the curated playlist section of the website, playtopotential.com, you might also like a couple of playlists that are specific to women. One of them is about the maternity transition. This involves insights from multiple women leaders on how they handle the transition around maternity. The other is women leadership, which is about how these women rose to the top of their respective professions and what are some of the specific challenges they've overcome given their gender. To know more about the transition and leadership advisory work I do, you could visit the About section at playtopotential.com or visit transitioninsight.com. I look forward to having you tune into one of the subsequent conversations at the Play to Potential podcast. Bye now.